Johnny Football takes his antics to Cleveland. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week, we'll remember Cooper Stadium with a longtime Clippers fan and a familiar voice to public radio fans around Ohio.
And Jim Tressel becomes a college president. We'll hear why Youngstown State University has picked the former OSU coach to lead the school.
But first, love him or hate him, football in Cleveland just got a lot more interesting.
The Cleveland Browns select Johnny Manziel, quarterback, Texas A&M.
ESPN broadcasting the first round of the NFL draft, where the Browns stole the spotlight with three trades and eventually landed Johnny Manziel, the brash quarterback known for once mocking a suspension by making money signs in the end zone.
The Browns filled another big need by picking up a defensive back with the eighth pick in the draft. The Bengals also picked up a defensive back, and two Buckeyes went in the first round.
Here to recap the first round is Rob Aller from the Columbus Dispatch. Rob, how excited are you about Johnny Manziel coming to Cleveland?
Yeah, it was a wild night, you know, back and forth, you know, watching Johnny sort of struggle there. They were calling him Johnny Freefall instead of Johnny Football, but then the Browns grabbed him, and I think the Browns are hoping that he's sort of a combination of Russell Wilson, the Seahawks quarterback, and Joe Namath. Broadway Joe, he brings that sizzle, but can he play, you know, in the NFL? I think they're hoping that. It was intriguing. No doubt, and I think he brings a boost to Cleveland, and that's what the Browns needed. I think it's also a little bit, it's like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. That's kind of where the Browns were and where the fans were. On one hand, you love this guy, Johnny Football, Manziel. On the other hand, they have so many needs. And they did take, you know, they did take care of that with their with Gilbert, the cornerback that they took first. With the eighth pick, they moved up from the ninth to the eighth pick, and so they solidified the defensive backfield there.
I will admit real quick that I was quick to tell coworkers this morning that I would probably hate Johnny Manziel if I met him in person, but as a Browns fan now, I love him, fully behind him.
That's exactly how it's working, I think. He's the guy you want on your team. If he's on another team, you can't stand him, and he just brings so much bling and, you know, a punk, I don't know, maybe it's not fair to say a punk attitude, but a competent attitude. And I think the Browns have needed that as a quarterback. They've either had A, really good guys, citizens, or B, just sort of the Brandon Whedon, just sort of soft and just smarmy. And this kid comes in with confidence, cockiness. Can he play? Can he stay healthy? That's the big issue. But it was a fun night.
It almost seemed like the Browns were the most exciting team in the draft yesterday. It's almost like they had a movie about them in their draft recently, and they had to live up to that expectation. They traded down from 4 to 9, 9 to 8, 26 to 22. It's almost like Kevin Costner knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I wondered, you know, is Costner running this team now? Is, you know, life imitates art, art imitates life, whatever you want to call it. It was kind of playing out that way. I thought it was, you know, I gave him an A. I'm not sure A+, because they could have taken at number 4. They originally had 4, and they moved out of that. They could have taken a super impact player. So I'm not sure it's an A+, but I gave him a solid A-minus.
I think so, too. And again, as a Browns fan, I've admitted, I hope this works out, but even if it doesn't, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, what do they have to lose? I mean, right? That was my point on it. You know, if you take Manziel and he doesn't work out, you know, so what? You've got Brian Hoyer as a quarterback. Who knows if he can make it? But I think it was definitely worth rolling the dice.
Steve and I were talking yesterday, and I said if Sammy Watkins is sitting there at number 4 and he's available, Cleveland needs to take him. But I think they came out in pretty good shape. They were able to get a first-round pick next year and move down to that 9 spot. I kind of like the trade there. Originally I said you need to take Sammy Watkins, but the way things turned out, not half bad.
No, and you know what? The Browns are probably going to spin it, and maybe this is the truth. That Justin Gilbert, who is the guy they did take at 8, that's the guy they wanted all along. So if they're going to say that, and if that's the truth, then you get your guy at 8, you get your first-round pick from the Buffalo Bills in 2015, you collect depth there with your picks, and and you get Johnny Manziel. I mean, what could be better? It did play out like Draft Day, the movie. Just amazing.
We've been talking this whole time about the Browns. The Bengals are defending AFC North champions. They made a pick with Darqueze Dennard, a defensive back out of Michigan State. Did you like where the Bengals went in the first round?
Absolutely. I really like this guy. I saw him in the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State, and he's a shutdown guy. I mean, really very few negatives, maybe some durability issues. But other than that, he can play. And the Bengals are getting a little old in the tooth, so to speak, in the defensive secondary. So this guy kind of shores that up. Very smart move, kind of getting overlooked. You know, when the Browns are so bad that they always get these high picks, and so they get a lot of the love and a lot of the hype. But the Bengals the last few years have really made smart, sharp moves in the draft, and this is another one.
We've talked a lot about the Cleveland and Cincinnati, but we are in Columbus. Let's talk about the two Ohio State Buckeyes that were picked. At 15, the Steelers took Ryan Shazier and hopefully are going to convert him into a linebacker that fits into the Steelers system.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this guy ran a 4.3, which is very fast for a linebacker. He's speedy. He's tough. He's smart. Good guy. I just think it's a perfect place for him to land. You know, Dick LeBeau, former Buckeye, you know, runs the defense at the Steelers. He loves Ohio State guys. I just think Shazier comes in. You know, there's a size issue, but if you look back through the history of the Steelers, they've had guys who were more athletic than huge. I mean, you had a Jack Lambert, you had a Jack Ham back in the day. So Shazier fits in with that. Very athletic, very speedy, perfect fit.
And Bradley Roby, a player that a lot of experts had falling into the second round, did make the first round. He was drafted by Denver. I think Denver has about the best secondary in the world now with Aqib Talib, T.J. Ward, and Bradley Roby.
Yeah, I thought, you know, there was some question whether he'd go in the first round because of, you know, off-the-field, quote, issues. And landed there, I think it's probably a good spot for him. Hey, he's first round. He made some money, right? So he'll work out. He's not the complete defensive back. I think he got, you know, he takes chances and gets burned at times. But, you know, that's what the great cornerbacks do. They just have to have short memories and not worry about the play they just got beat on, but look ahead to the next play where they're going to make the interception. So that's Roby. He's got the right mentality. And I think some of the off-the-field stuff has been overblown. You know, I don't know for sure, but it's time for him to shape up if it has been an issue. And that's where he stands. I think a good pick again.
It always amazes me the spectacle the NFL draft has turned into. It's a reality show, really, what it is. Cutting to clips of Johnny Manziel every 30 seconds and it expertly produced. You know, how has it become this spectacle of a show?
Well, the NFL, if you say one thing about the NFL, it is marketed itself like no other league. I mean, it's, you know, the NFL football is number one among fans. And so it's done this thing where it's put it in New York, where they bring New York fans in there and they're screaming and booing. It is a show, much like the Heisman Trophy presentation has become this schlocky hype thing. The draft has done the same, and yet the draft has a little more to it than the Heisman. It actually means something. So I just think the NFL is pure genius when it comes to how it's handled its business. Now, there have been some chinks in the armor here lately with the concussion stuff and off the field, you know, issues with players. But overall, the NFL just gets it. You know, it may get a little soft and fat and happy moving forward with some of the things it's doing in terms of kind of dumbing down the game and taking away some of the physical nature of the game. But that's in response, I think, to the legal side of concussions. And, it's caught in these two worlds of one legally worrying about, you know, getting sued, on the other hand, keeping the fans engaged. So if it can navigate those tricky waters, I think it's going to be fine. But mostly the NFL is just, you know,
it's king.
If you want to run a business, they do it.
Yeah, just for a little context, last night the NFL in the TV ratings drew a 6.8 share. The Heat and Nets had a 2.6, and the Blazers and Spurs 2.7.
There you have it. I mean, it's king. It's good to be king, and the NFL and the Shield is king. So it knows what it's doing. You know, it can cut away, like you said, cut away to these shots of Johnny Manziel drinking a beer and then drinking more water than any human should be allowed to drink at one time. I thought he was going to float away with how much he was drinking. They just build drama into it. Perfect analogy, you said. It's like a reality show.
We've been recapping the first round of the NFL Draft with Columbus Dispatch sports columnist Rob Aller. Good to talk to you as always, Rob.
See you next time.
As a kid, there were a few things that I loved more than making the trip into Columbus to watch Clippers games. And little did I know I could have been sitting next to a future colleague, Bill Cohen.
The longtime public radio reporter is a huge Clippers fan and spent decades attending games in Cooper Stadium. Work recently began to turn the old Franklinton Park into a racetrack and automotive center. So we thought we'd sit down with Bill to reminisce on Cooper Stadium.
So Bill, you loved Cooper Stadium so much that you protested the Clippers' move to Huntington Park.
Well, yes, that's true. I did. Because Cooper Stadium, it represented my youth. You know, people love to think back on their youth with fondness. And heck, I'd been going to that stadium for 50 years, probably when I was 8 or 10 years old. I was going to that stadium in the late 1950s. It was Jet Stadium then. And I would go there and watch the Columbus Jets play. And then I went for decades and decades after that, when the Jets left town, and then it was a cornfield for 7 years in the 70s, and then it was revived again as Cooper Stadium with the Clippers. And so, yes, I had great feelings for that stadium, so I didn't want that to end.
I hope I'm not insulting your childhood here, but it's not a really nice place, visually at least. It's kind of drab. It's next to a cemetery. You can hear cars on the interstate. It's not a real appealing place for most people, but you saying you just loved it. You had a lot of fond memories.
Yeah, and even though, okay, it's in kind of a gritty end of town, and, you know, some people say, oh, I don't feel safe there in the parking lot. I don't know. I mean, to me, that was the charm of it. It was in a real part of town.
Right.
It was gritty. It was rusty, yes. Some of the stands were falling and they were rusting out. But to me, that was the charm of it, plus the history. You knew that that was the stadium where the Columbus Redbirds were playing in the 1930s and 40s, and then the Jets in the 50s and 60s, and then the Clippers after that. So it had a great history to it.
Back before the Clippers were the farm team for the Indians, they were the farm team for the Yankees. What were some of the Yankee greats that came through Columbus that you enjoyed seeing in the 90s? I mean, I'm thinking of a lot of these guys that they were in the dynasty of the Yankees, 90s teams came through Columbus.
Well, I remember seeing this young kid, Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Who's he?
Huh?
<Just kidding. laughs>
And I said, hey, he's pretty good. Well, he lasted about 1 year with the Clippers, and then boom, he was up. Another guy, Don Mattingly. Mm-hmm. I remember the year he played with the Clippers, I think he batted something like 290. The next year he went up with the Yankees. I figured, well, he's not going to bat 290. After all, he's playing at a higher level. Instead, he hits like 320 for the Yankees. I said, wow, that's amazing. So
it's the air in New York.
Yeah, the New York connection was great. Although, I mean, I also have memories of, you know, the Jets with their connections with the Pirates. Willie Stargell's on my list. Yeah, Don Clendenin. I remember him as a first baseman. Bobby Veal, a 6'5" pitcher. I don't think I'm making this up. I think I saw Steve Blass pitch a 7-inning no-hitter at Cooper Stadium.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah.
What's the allure of minor league baseball? Is it the cheap ticket? Is it the relaxed atmosphere? Is it something else?
It's all that. Plus, I kind of like the fact these guys are playing for, you know, I don't know what their pay is really.
It's
$30,000, $50,000, I don't know. It's not millions and millions of dollars, and yet they're out there plugging away. And I think they really, I mean, and they're almost as good as Major League. And some of them are as good, and they go up. So I think that needs to be rewarded. I respect it. I get a big kick out of these guys giving it their all. I mean, to me, a guy shouldn't have to be a success in the majors for you to say that guy's a good ball player. If he got up to AAA level and hit 300, I think he should be happy with himself. Although I understand the allure of, oh, if he can just get one more level up, he can make millions.
We reported last summer that Cooper Stadium was selling off their seats to fans and memorabilia. Did you get a chance to purchase any of the seats from Cooper Stadium, or did you have the desire to?
I didn't really have a desire to do that. I'm cheap, too, so that's probably another reason.
Why you're such a big minor league baseball
that's
fan.
That's right. Well, that's true. But a friend of mine got me this old wooden, 2 feet by 2 feet. It was just basically a box on wheels painted blue. And he went to that auction, or at least an earlier auction, and got one of those for a few bucks and gave it to me as a memento. That's what they used to just put the tickets in physically. Of course, Now they scan it with a barcode, you know. But again, that's kind of the allure of it, or at least the history.
I know the exact boxes you're talking about. You say Huntington Park has won you over. You're a fan now.
Yes. I wanted to keep the old stadium. I like that place. And I was worried they were going to raise the ticket prices. I was worried the parking was going to be a hassle and they'd raise the prices for that. And I was worried about something else. At the old stadium, it was very rare, but you could do it. You could bring your own sandwich into that stadium.
You could bring your own beer, too. Sneak it in a thermos.
I don't remember that part. I'm not a beer drinker. But you could bring your own sandwich without being patted down. I thought that was great. What a great thing. Let regular folks come without paying a mint. And I said, oh, if they build this new stadium, they're going to pat you down just like at OSU Stadium. You won't even be able to bring in bottled water. Well, I was wrong. They let you today. You can still go out and buy a Burger King or whatever and bring that in if you want. The ticket prices haven't mushroomed a whole lot. Especially for general admission, you can still get in for six or seven bucks
for standing room seats. Yeah.
And
for
me, discount.
For me, a senior citizen, I can get in for $4 the day of the game, or if I plan ahead and buy it ahead of time, $3.
You can barely rent a movie for that.
That's a bargain. I mean, to me, it's one of the best entertainment bargains in town. So anyway, the fact that the county commissioners and the folks who ran the Clippers, they kept things in many ways the way they were. And so my wife, Randy, and I, we go to many games every year, and we've been won over. We were opposed to the new stadium. Now that it's been built, when we're used to it, and they keep it affordable, we're big converts.
So you've accepted the new stadium. Huntington Park's here to stay. How did you feel when you found out Cooper Stadium was getting turned into a multipurpose race arena and research facility?
Well, I didn't really have strong feelings about that one way or the other. I mean, I guess I said, well, at least they're going to do something with it. And that end of town needs whatever it can get, as long as it's something somewhat positive. That was fine with me.
We've been reminiscing on Cooper Stadium, the former home of the Columbus Clippers. That's being repurposed into a racetrack and automotive center. And we've been talking about it with Bill Cohen, longtime Ohio Public Radio reporter and a longtime Clippers fan. Bill, thanks again.
Thank you.
Columbus Clippers, ring your bell. They'll always be team players, they'll never let you down. That's what makes our Clippers, they talk all over town. No matter
3 years after leaving Ohio State University in disgrace, Jim Tressel is a college president.
On Friday, trustees at Youngstown State University voted to select the former YSU coach as the school's next president.
And your reaction, Thomas?
I think it's a good move. I think it builds some excitement about a small school in Youngstown State, and I think he's a familiar face around Ohio that can really bring some good to the school.
I guess I don't fully understand the role of a college president. I know Gordon Gee was very well known and very popular at OSU for being a fundraiser. I assume that's a very big part of the job, and I think Tressel does that right away.
I think at bigger schools, the role of a college president is downplayed a little bit in that they are a big fundraiser and they are the face of the university. I think at smaller schools like Youngstown State, I think Jim Tressel is going to have a lot more administrative roles and responsibilities as one would think.
Day-to-day, hands in the work, hands in the sausage of the university, actually.
I believe so, yeah.
That raises a question. I guess he was a vice president at the University of Akron, but how well schooled can he be in running a college on a day-to-day basis?
Well, how much experience did he get running an Ohio State football team for how many years? How much experience did he get going back in the day? He's used to leading young men and coaches and a staff. Like how many people are on staff at the Ohio State football program? There's 15 assistant coaches and then an army of volunteers and interns that he's all got to lead. So
it's probably bigger than the YSU faculty.
It's probably comparable.
It might be comparable.
So experience is not one thing I'm concerned about with Jim Tressel. I think. His focus on education is there through his work at the University of Akron, and I think he had a focus on education when he was the head football coach at Ohio State.
And when you look at Jim Tressel, he looks like a college president. He's very senatorial. He's very distinguished looking. He's a great face for the university.
Sure, and if you wear a sweater vest every day, you've now got got yourself marketing the sweater vest president.
Do you think he does that? Do you think he pulls the sweater vest constantly at YSU?
I don't see why he wouldn't. It's his thing. Well, embrace it.
Yeah,
especially if you're supposed to be a fundraiser. And Guy had the bow tie.
Right.
Jim Trussell's going to have the sweater vest. So if you want to build a face and make Youngstown State something that more than a small college in Ohio, embrace it.
Are you surprised at all at how quickly Trussell was able to turn around his career? I mean, we downplay it a lot because of Urban Meyer and all the good news about OSU football lately, but it was really in a bad place in the summer of 2011.
It was. He had that opportunity to work as the replay coach with the Indianapolis Colts for a season, and that didn't pan out. And then he wound up at Akron, but he really has turned around. And now he's a university president. He's turned around his career quite quickly, and I am impressed.
And I'm impressed, too, and it will be interesting to see where his career goes from here.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Northeast Ohio guy, so does he stay at YSU, or does he try to become president somewhere else?
Who knows? I mean, possibilities are obviously not endless, but he could go a number of places. Put in a couple years at YSU, make an impact, change some things there, and he's got himself a resume to be a college president elsewhere.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find us at WOSU.org/AfterTheScore and on the WOSU Public Media mobile app.
You can find the show on iTunes and search for us on Twitter @AfterTheScore. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.